Now, prayer is one of the biggest parts of my life. In my early life, it was a very unhealthy thing that came from this place of fear, seeking this external thing to come save me. And now I pray with the recognition of both the God and the Goddess within myself that when I'm praying for protection, I'm not praying for something to protect me. I am praying as the archetype and pillar of protection myself, because I am the reflection of God that gets to anchor that in, to anchor that into my being. And that is so vastly different than the Christian conception, where the books that were chosen for the canon that became the Old Testament that was spread by the Catholic Church were all of the texts that talked about God outside of yourself. Another teaching of Yeshua and Mary is this idea that we're 100% human and 100% divine. And that's where integrated duality gets to come in and be very interesting, as well as from the space of, okay, when I'm going through something really challenging, I get to rise into this more spiritual space. And
what's good, fam? It's your boy Dijon. I'm here representing the Dharma Glow podcast. Good to have you. This movement that we're doing here at Dharma Glow is all about helping you live a liberated and luminous lifestyle. So on this podcast, we're going to be hearing stories of people on their road to purpose, what they discovered along the way, and what the expression of their purpose looks like at this time. We also have live in-person events to create community. So if you want to come through and join us, head on over to dharmaglow.com. And there you'll find other opportunities to tap in. We're grateful to have you here. Enjoy the episode. All right, what's good, Dharma Glow family? I'm here with Jade Michael. She's somebody I connected with on the Instagram. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's a blessing and an honor to be able to show up this morning and share this digital space with you.
Glad to have you. So I don't know if it would be right to refer to you as a hermeticist. Would that be accurate?
That is accurate. Yeah. Yep. I am a hermeticist.
Which is really cool, because that's a pretty deep esoteric modality. But since we're in the age of Aquarius, all these esoteric things are coming more into the mainstream. And I came across her profile through a mutual friend's post that she was in. And I just tapped into her sharing, and it was just like a very deeply embodied expression of these principles in a modern way. And there's a lot of information out there, but how people transmit them is what resonates with me, and your style definitely resonated.
Thank you, brother.
Enlighten us on your journey and how you came across this deep wisdom and how you're able to embody it so powerfully. So first of all, what I'd like to give people the opportunity to do is to tell their life story in 3 minutes and 33 seconds. Obviously, it doesn't have to be exact. Okay. Start. I was born here up till now.
Okay. 3 minutes and 33 seconds on the clock. Let's do it. So I was born in Riverton, Wyoming, but when I was like very young, my mom moved to Salt Lake City, Utah. And so I was really raised in the mountains of Salt Lake City from 0 to 26. I then moved to Montana to do graduate school in experimental psychology after completing a bachelor's in chemistry at the University of Utah. And now I'm out in San Diego, about to move to Los Angeles. And so that's the geographical trajectory of how things went. And then more on the internal spectrum of how I grew and became to be who I am now. When I was around 6 years old, I started expressing obsessive compulsive disorder. And I spent many years of my life living in a space of fight or flight mode, completely dysregulated, very mentally disordered. And the Western medical model essentially told me, you're Jade, you have OCD, and this is going to be your life. And then around the ages of, it was a slow unfolding, but in my late teens, I found meditation. And then around the age of 23, I read The Kybalion and found hermetic wisdom for the first time. And then I started studying principles of neuroscience. And I started to piece things together in a way that led me to know that mental illness is transient. It's a rite of passage that we're meant to overcome to get to the next level. And from that perspective and these tools and modalities I started to compile, especially Hermetic Wisdom, I was able to essentially rewire my neural circuitry to come to a place where I get to sit in the driver's seat of my cognition and I feel calm and happy and regulated, which is something I was pretty much told would not be the case. And so now I'm here in San Diego and I am putting in my work, walking along my dharmic path of sharing the tools and the modalities that worked in this process of re-becoming and re-remembering this version of myself that I am now that is healthy.
Wow. Amazing. What a powerful story and a powerful perspective shift you were able to step into, to not be victimized by what you experienced, but to see it as an invitation to become your highest self. Mm-hmm. And I think that you articulated it so well, but it comes through very clearly that when you speak and when you move and when you do things, it's intentional, but it doesn't seem like robotic or inauthentic. It still feels very much alive and fluid and laced with your personality. So congratulations on your journey through that to the other side.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it was a journey is a good word for it. And it's the ever unfolding journey.
Mm-hmm. So you said you were diagnosed when you were 6. What was it? I didn't know kids could get diagnosed that early. Like, what was it that was helping them to realize that's what was going on?
Yeah. So I wasn't diagnosed at 6. In some soul retrieval processes, I've been able to go back and recognize that the childhood trauma that incurred when I was 6 years old is what essentially turned on the gene expression for obsessive compulsive disorder. And what's interesting is a lot of children, and especially female children, tend to be better at masking, and so masking symptoms. And so my mom actually wasn't aware that I had OCD until I think I was about 12 or 13, and I ended up, she had to take me to the ER because I was having these impulsive, intrusive thoughts that wouldn't go away, and I was having a complete meltdown, like I had been having a panic attack for hours. And she didn't know what was wrong with me, so she ended up taking me to the ER, and that was the first time the terminology of OCD really entered the chat. But there were so many years before that that it was expressing, but it was very thought-based. And the first kind of OCD that I had is a pretty rare form. It's called scrupulosity, which has to do with morality and prayer and religion. And essentially, I would have so many intrusive thoughts about demons and hell and fire, the hellfire brimstone conception of the Christian story of good and evil, right? And I lived in so much fear of the evil darkness in that whole story that I became an obsessive prayer. And so I would be praying in my head for hours and hours. And if I messed up a word, I had to go back to the beginning and start over because it was obsessive. And I wasn't praying out of this place of love. I was praying out of this place of like crippling fear because I thought if I didn't pray, someone would die or I would die and it would be my fault. And I lived with so much, there's so much guilt and shame and fear and anxiety. But what's really interesting is like on the outside for a very long time, I held it down. Like people thought that I just had generalized anxiety or sometimes I was maybe just like a little weird and quiet. But in my head, I was like going through it, like fighting for my life is really what it felt like. And so I can trace back the trauma that upregulated the gene expression for OCD to about 6 years old, but it didn't become something that was known within my family that I was really struggling with until I was 12-ish. And then OCD can come in phases and it can change its structure. It can be very adaptable. And so I had probably from 12 to 14, a really debilitating bout of it. And then it got better for a little while. And then during my undergrad in college is when it came back in like full force, but that time with like germophobia.
Yeah, I can relate to that. Intrusive thoughts and definitely the negative programming mm-hmm. from Orthodox religion, in my case, mm-hmm. also Christianity.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really interesting how something that can be, at least in the perspective that I'm in now, like close to the truth, but distorted so much that it becomes mm-hmm. something that causes so much pain and trauma. And I feel like we're currently at a place where we can look past, look through the distortions of things mm-hmm. into the truth. And that's a process of healing that I feel like I'm still on, but I feel like I, at this point, do have a understanding of the genuine message of Christ and not the dogmatic, distorted version.
Yep.
It was really soothing and good for my nervous system and also helping me feel like I fit into a whole more. I'm glad that we can see what that other stuff is for what it is. And I know a lot of people are waking up from that in real time as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
So specifically, when did you get introduced to these hermetic principles that are not religious? They're more just, I'll let you explain it. When did you get introduced to them?
Yeah. So I want to say 23. And I have a dear friend named Trevor, and he grew up LDS, left the Mormon church, then was getting really into occult wisdom. So he was telling me all these fascinating things, and there were seven hermetic principles that were essentially like the codex of how the universe works at the fundamental basis of consciousness outside of yourself and within yourself. And I was like, wow, that sounds super fascinating. And so I read The Kybalion for the first time, and it blew me wide open. And it was this experience of recognizing that I am not new to this philosophy. Like, I've been working with this philosophical system for lifetimes, but it was my first exposure in this lifetime to that reawakening, to that remembering. And in retrospect, it's so interesting because when I started reading The Kybalion, I started to realize that a lot of the OCD compulsions I had, and you do a compulsion to try to make sure an obsession doesn't happen. It's like your control mechanism. A lot of the compulsions I was exhibiting were actually hermetic rituals or like ceremonial practices of like prayer and food blessing, which can nest in really tightly with the hermetic ideologies. And so I started to see how I've carried the hermetic principles as part of my North Star, my life guidance system, since I was really little. And the first time I read The Kybalion, it was just like the full goosebumps experience of, oh, for me, this is capital T truth. And in learning these principles, it really gave me the keys that I needed to continue unlocking my consciousness from the cages that OCD had put me in. And it's one of those philosophical systems that as you learn it, there's that cerebral process of intaking the information. But then from that point, as you see these principles move through you, like it's a living philosophy that moves through your life. And so as you begin to see it experientially, it's, oh, I get it. There it is. Hallelujah. It makes sense.
Oh, that's amazing. So it sounds like it was probably something you worked closely with in another lifetime and you mm-hmm. were just reawakening it.
For sure. For sure. And up until that point, I've had a couple glimpses of like maybe moments of past lives, but I'm calling it in. Like, I am so open for the great remembering of the wisdom of past lives to come through in this lifetime. Like, I hold that vision. Hasn't happened yet, but the closest I've gotten to that is reading the Hermetic Principles and just having this knowing of, oh, I've been working with this for a very long time, like a time frame that far extends beyond this present physical spacesuit embodiment that I'm currently in.
Right. And from my understanding, There's the Christian perspective that man is inherently sinful, and then there's right and wrong and heaven and hell for eternity. But from the Hermetic perspective and from the perspective that I understand Jesus to be speaking from, there is no such thing as right or wrong. It's cause and effect. Mm. When you do something, that creates an effect. And if you want to live a conscious, intentional experience, you need to be conscious of the causes that you're having. Sin is less about being wrong, and it's more about ignorance of impact. Mm-hmm. Once you start to learn these principles of Hermeticism, then you're able to become the conscious creator of your causes.
Ooh, you gave me chills. You gave me chills. Yeah, that's exactly it. And that was like the key that really turned the lock, because being a little girl praying from so much fear, I felt so unsafe. And so I was praying to this God outside of myself for protection. Please protect me. Please protect my family. Just from this fear construct of looking for something external to come in and be the savior. But then being exposed to the Hermetic principles, which tell us with the principle of mentalism, thing number one is that the all exists within the all, and the all is also within all, meaning that God is within you as much as God is outside of you. Mm-hmm. And then that became to completely transform my relationship with prayer, because now prayer is one of the biggest parts of my life. And in my early life, it was a very unhealthy thing that came from this place of fear, seeking this external thing to come save me. And now I pray with the recognition of both the God and the Goddess within myself, that when I'm praying for protection, I'm not praying for something to protect me. I am praying as the archetype and pillar of protection myself, because I am the reflection of God that gets to anchor that in, to anchor that into my being. Mm-hmm. And that is so vastly different than the Christian conception, where the books that were chosen for the canon that became the Old Testament that was spread by the Catholic Church were all of the texts that talked about God outside of yourself. Right. But we're finding more and more texts now about the God within yourself as right. well. And they're both part of the story, right? And so I think part of this great awakening, this delayering that we're going through right now, where we're letting go of the clothes, the spiritual and philosophical clothes, the ideologies that don't fit anymore, I think a big part of that is coming back into the remembrance that God is both outside of yourself and within yourself. And there are some beautiful pieces of the Christian doctrine, beautiful pieces of the Bible, but it is an incomplete story. And so now with the age of Aquarius, this occult wisdom coming forward, we're able to bring together, okay, here's the Hermeticism, here's the Christianity, here are the teachings of Buddha. There are so many places these intersect, and it's really just to inform this truth that the God you're looking for is also hanging out right here. It's
100%. It feels so good for this perspective to be more ubiquitous and becoming more so every day. And just to piggyback on your perception, to me, that energy is dormant within us, even though we are it. And the degree to which you experience God is based on how intentional you are in cultivating that energy within, because we have free will to experience reality as like a base level, basically animalistic human being, or as a fully conscious Christed being. And everyone has the same potential. It's just everyone doesn't realize their full potential, at least not in a specific incarnation, right? Because I believe that the destiny of every human journey is the remembrance of themselves as God and experiencing that oneness. It's almost like we have a GPS system that we get to choose our direction, but it pretty much reroutes you to the same path. And there are certain times when the universe cuts down the options. Like sometimes you can just loop through the same lessons over and over again, and then sometimes the universe is like, this, deal with this now, face it, right? Which is what happened to the human collective with COVID, and just being like, the way y'all are living, we're not going to continue that. Let's switch it up. Yeah.
This is not working out, man.
How old were you when you started diving into these principles?
It was early 20s. I think around 23 was the first time I read The Kybalion. And then it was this big aha moment. But then I spent the next like year or two just watching how they unfolded in my life. And at that point in time, which is, it's a common thing for people who have trauma in their past, is that the masculine really steps forward. Like the internal masculine really steps forward as the protector to be like, okay, no matter what, one foot in front of the other, we're going to keep going. You're fine. I'm going to keep you safe. It's very like survival, like military survival, just keep going. And reading The Principle of Gender, when I got to the seventh principle, I had this huge realization of, even though I was living in this female embodiment on the inside, I felt very masculine, so, so masculine, and that I had never even really touched the potential of the feminine inside of myself. Mm-hmm. So I spent like the next 2 years after that, like really nurturing the feminine inside of me. And the way the principles work is you apply the higher laws against the lower laws. And so when you're working with the principle of gender, you're affecting all of the laws that come under that. Mm. And so in choosing that trajectory for myself of beginning to balance my feminine energy, I started to watch cause and effect and rhythm and polarity and vibration, and all of the principles start to come through and interweave their way into the tapestry of the new energetic resonance that I was building for myself.
That's amazing. I think it's important for us to recognize, and I know you already do, that we all contain all of the energy within, because the creator, source, whatever you want to call it, is not a he or a she. It's genderless, because masculine and feminine are the same thing at different polarities. I think that's the gap between the Old Testament and the New Testament and the antiquated version of the divine, like it used to be. It's this human-like being outside of ourselves that has a specific gender, a specific body, has wrath and all these human emotions. And it's like none of those emotions exist in the field of the divine. Those are only human things, including gender, right? So we can tap into different energies within ourselves depending on what part of our life we're experiencing and what needs to be called forward. And I think it's important to have that fluidity internally, right? Even in conversation, right? I'm in the masculine role right now and you're receiving in the feminine role. But in order to have a conversation, you have to oscillate between both.
Yeah, 100%. From the perspective of hermetic wisdom, gender was essentially the first thing. Like you have the all, the infinite intelligence, our creator, which is within and without. We essentially live in this, the lucid daydream of the creator. We are not separate. But in order for the creator to create, the first distinction that was made was masculine and feminine energy, because it allows for procreation, sexual and creative energy to come together and continue the process of creation. And so inherently, anything that has been created within the all has its masculine and its feminine principles. Mm-hmm. And I've started this process, which I'm just loving so much, of really thinking about my masculine and my feminine principles within myself as their two archetypes. Yes, who I am fully expressed is those two things in union, and my health and being in my spiritual radiance is dependent on how balanced those are. But also, like when I am feeling a little unmotivated, I'll lean into my masculine principle and even talk to myself as him and be like, okay, baby girl, you got to get your ass out of bed. We're going to get up and get it today. We have 3 meetings. And after those meetings, we're going to do some yoga and you're going to feel so good after we're productive. And then after that, I let my feminine come in and she's, damn, King, you worked so hard today. We're going to eat some chocolate and watch a movie and we're going to enter that space of nourishment, right? Because the masculine is like that discipline, which is so important. He's the structure and the feminine is the nurturing. And so we need that balance within ourselves. And that's, it's also the teaching of Yeshua to be the beloved. Like we hear the beloved, but if you, it's one of those things that's so on the nose, it's so simple that you're like, it can't really be that simple, but it is. And that's why it's so profound. Like it doesn't need to be complicated to be profound. But the be loved is to be love. It's to be love within yourself, to have so much love flowing through your system that it radiates outside of yourself. But in order to be that love, your masculine and your feminine principle need to be in divine union with each other. And that's the magnum opus in alchemy anyway. It's why the principle of gender is the seventh principle. That's the highest ideal, is to come into that full balance of masculine and feminine within yourself. That's why Christ was out here doing so many incredible things, right? And so, and to me, that's one of those places where it's, wow, one of the highest teachings of Hermeticism, the magnum opus of alchemy that we want to get to, is also the same teaching that Christ brought forward. Christ was an alchemist. Christ was an incredible ascended master teacher, period. You won't convince me otherwise.
I love it. I love the path. That's what feels so good. I can feel the energy flowing through your channel with such a charge. And that's literally what's attractive to me, right? Because if we think of the masculine and feminine in terms of energetics, then the masculine is electric and the feminine is magnetic. And just like you see on a battery, there's the plus and the minus. The masculine is the plus, the feminine is minus. And when you bring those energy together, that's what makes the charge, right? Mm-hmm. That's what creates the electricity. We are electrical beings. Mm-hmm. Learning how to view ourselves as electrical beings and create that energetic harmony, which is like alkalizing your body, increasing the electricity, increasing your ability to receive like the soul's magnetism from the electric transmission of spirit. Because for me, Jesus was the person, Yeshua, Jeshua, depending on which language you're using. Christ is the honorific title. So it's Obama is the person, president is the title. So Yeshua achieves Christhood, which, unlike the president, is not something that other people can vote you into having. It's a personal journey you have to actually experience. And usually it takes many incarnations to get to that point. In that incarnation, he came as an avatar to bring a specific message at that specific time in history. And he is not the only expression of Christ that has existed in human form, because I believe the Buddha is one of those expressions. Muhammad is one of those expressions. Kuan Yin is one of those expressions. There's been masculine and feminine expressions of that energy. And they all have a specific message to give based on the time period that they come and the culture that they come to.
Yeah, truth bumps. Right. Truth bumps. You're so right. And I'm going to encode that into my own brain more as I speak about it moving forward, because Yeshua was an ascended master teacher who achieved Christhood, as was Mary Magdalene, and the work they were able to do together, right, really in so many ways, I believe, has set the stage for the great awakening that we're in right now, which is the remembrance that Christ energy is in here. And that, I think, that ties back to the beginning of our conversation of Christianity implores people to seek the God outside of themselves. And so there's so many people who are Christian waiting for the second coming of Christ as Yeshua returns again from the sky on a white stallion. And could that happen? Sure. Am I open to it? Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. But to me, it makes way more sense that the second coming of Christ is actually the coming of Christ in the collective consciousness, when the collective consciousness is ordained with that Christhood. And that only happens when we all make the personal choice within ourselves as pieces of the collective to find that Christhood within.
I would 100% agree. And I'm excited for the opportunity. I feel confident I'm on that path. I feel confident you're on that path. I have some really great literature to share with you about that. And me personally, I don't think he's coming back, because that's not the point, right? The point is not for us to be saved. The point is for us to remember who we are. And in that remembrance, choose activities that align with the Christ energy. Because for me, the Christ energy is like a Wi-Fi signal that's being blasted out by the all. The all is in a non-changing, unmanifest space. The moving part of the all is the Son of God, which is the Christ consciousness. You could say the child of God, because it's not about the gender. Mm-hmm. And that energy broadcast out the signal, which we can align with and embody if we choose to. And the key to doing that, it's not complicated. It's just attention, intention, and focus. And that's why there's so much distraction that exists today, because you can't actually stop someone who has chosen to embody that consciousness, because they're more powerful than anyone else, because mm-hmm. they're in touch with the true laws of the universe. But you can distract somebody from paying attention to that with notifications on Instagram and all these different mm-hmm. things. If you want to get deeper into the types of understanding and the knowledge and the wisdom, and to really go through this deep process of embodiment, I believe you have a program upcoming for people to really dive deep, right?
Yeah, I do. It's called Neurosovereignty, Hermetic Wisdom for the Modern Initiate. And what you just
title. That's so dope.
Thank you. And what you said is the perfect segue into that conversation, because a lot of this program has to do with retraining our I mind, our masculine mind, which is our attention and our awareness. And so many people these days perceive alchemy as this far off, distant thing that maybe some people can access, some can't. It's elusive, it's just magical. But at the end of the day, anybody has access to alchemy if their attention and their awareness is in order. And that's what neurosovereignty is. It's having sovereign control over your mindset and your nervous system, your emotional well-being, because alchemy is mental transmutation. So neurosovereignty is like it's the basic. If you want to reach towards the applying the seven hermetic principles to your life, step number one is coming into this space of neurosovereignty. And we live in a digital age which has so many blessings. Like, you and I have only been able to connect because of Instagram, and that's amazing. But in so many ways, media directs our awareness to places that are conditioned by cultural programming to have the nicest cars and the biggest homes and the fattest ass, and that when you have so much money, make your fence taller instead of your table longer. And it creates this sort of copycat energy where society has told us the things that will make us feel successful. And so we're all trying to be more and more like those things. And meanwhile, it's diminishing our attentional control too, because if you're scrolling and your phone is sending you a new video every 5 seconds, you're just hitting reset, 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 reset on your attentional control network, which is so dangerous, because your attention is your masculine principle, is your masculine mind. So your ability to procure and manifest and work for the life you want for yourself is directly implicated by the amount of attentional control and the quality of awareness that you hold. And so much of this program is training attentional control, it's training awareness, and it's strengthening that masculine mind, but it's doing so that the masculine within yourself can be in reverence to your feminine. Because if your masculine is strong, if your container is strong, then your feminine can come in and dance and create and be the garden. The masculine is the gardener and he plants the seed, but the feminine is the garden that turns it into this prolific arena of life. And so if you want to access your power of manifestation, if you want to access your alchemical power, this really comes down to balancing the masculine and the feminine within yourself. But I think the portal we need to move through right now as the society that we're currently living in is the gate of initiation of neurosovereignty. Because in so many ways, we've forfeited the strength of our masculine principle for the convenience of modern life in a lot of ways. And now it's time for us to reclaim that so we can enter a space of neurosovereignty and become the alchemists of our reality. So yeah, the program is called Neurosovereignty. It launches on January 3rd, 2024. It's an 8-week initiation in which you will be guided in like a step-by-step process of how to update and upgrade the consciousness-based software system that your mind is running. And from that point, regulate the nervous system and then integrate the 7 hermetic principles into your daily life. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun and awesome. And I just, my heart is so full to be to the point of bringing this forward.
Wow, sister, that's so amazing. You really are so gifted at bringing this through with such infectious passion. I'm excited about it, and I already know these things. I'm like, ooh, I want to take it. That sounds fun. So just logistically, you said it was January 3rd it starts. 8 weeks, is that right?
Yeah, January 3rd it begins. It's going to be 8 weeks. We meet on Wednesdays from 6 to 8 p.m. PST, so California time. And let's see, what else?
What's the investment in self?
The investment in self for early bird is $1,111, and that is available until December 12th. And then after that, it goes up to
$1,444. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. We'll try to get this podcast out ASAP so people can take advantage of that early bird deal.
Amazing.
I'm very full with just hearing how you're showing up in the world, and you're very much operating in your Dharma. Your Dharma is glowing beautifully, and I'm grateful that you've gone through the things you've gone through to come out the other side and share your wisdom. It's a deep honor to experience your vibration. And just on a human level, I would love to hear, because it's like we're all people too. We like to have a good time. Mm-hmm. Let's say, give me your ideal Saturday. You could be anywhere. Money is not an option. What, from when you wake up to when you go to bed, what's your ideal Saturday?
Oh, man. Okay, ideal Saturday. I want to wake up. For me, my morning routine is everything. So if I could spend 4 hours on my morning routine, meditation, mantra, yoga, reading, I'm very ambiverted. So I like to recharge with my like introverted self time in the morning and then emerge from that hermit portal. Oh, go play on the beach for several hours. Just get in the salty water, maybe a catamaran. I love catamarans. I could totally be down to go on a catamaran for a little while. And then I would love to spend the night dancing. Yeah, dancing to Latin, reggaeton music. Probably drinking it. I don't drink so much anymore, but if I'm on the dance floor like that, I'll probably have one drink with a little bit of tequila. Sounds pretty good. And yeah, dance. Just dance the night away. Dancing is such a big part of my practice. I love it so much. And so every Saturday night that I could plan to be the best Saturday night of my life is going to include dance. And probably some Thai food. I love Thai food. Thai food, then dancing would be my goal.
Yeah, that sounds very similar to my ideal Saturday. I love the long rising rituals and then the connection once you create a certain frequency within. Yeah. I love to eat good food. I love Thai food as well. Not my favorite, but like definitely an intentional, like really meal, like plant-based meal would be incredible. And the dancing too. I think I'd probably hit like the microdose of psilocybin as opposed to tequila, but like we could still have a good dance party.
You know, what's funny is as that was coming out, I realized it was like an old patterning from like earlier 20s, me wanting to go to dance clubs and drink a little bit. And as that was coming out, I was like, there's no way I'd have it. Maybe one drink, but I would definitely take 0.4 grams of psilocybin. And then if I found that vibe and I still want a little bit of tequila, I would maybe, but in this phase of my life, probably not.
Yeah, I feel you. I was talking to a friend the other day about the importance of placing spirit first in the spirit matter discussion, but not rejecting matter. So it's like, being in touch with these things and knowing yourself and knowing the laws of the universe is supremely important. That's the place we should live from. And we can also enjoy the material experience and our human experience. And It says in the Bible, like, Jesus drank wine, right? So it's, we're not trying to be monks, or at least I'm not trying to be a monk. Like, I'm okay to enjoy my experience just in the right proportion. My mom brings home Krispy Kreme donuts and it's like, I'm not going to eat that every day, but every once in a while, it's just like, just enjoy it. Just eat the donut.
Yeah. I think that's another teaching of Yeshua and Mary, is this idea that we're 100% human and 100% divine. And that's where integrated duality gets to come in and be very interesting, as well as from the space of, okay, when I'm going through something really challenging, I get to rise into this more spiritual space and go from being like, why is this happening to me, to how is this happening for me, and become the creator consciousness in that space of learning the lessons. And at the same time, there can be a very human part inside of me that needs to cry, that needs to scream, that needs to move through the emotions, and the body keeps the score. And so it's your choice if you're going to feel it now and be a vessel for this to move through, or if you're going to store it so that it becomes a problem later. And that's the work of the alchemist, is being in that space of integrated duality that has the eye ever on the star, knowing the spiritual truth, and is also going through the real in-moment emotional processing, because emotions are alchemical power. That's an alchemical power source. And so if we can self-elect into feeling them and letting them flow through us, that's truly how we alchemize our reality. And on the other side of that coin, the human gets to have fun too. Eat the donut, microdose the mushrooms, go play at the beach. Don't take this for granted. Yeah. Our souls are infinite and we'll have many lifetimes, but that does not detract from how very special this body is that I only get to live in for this one lifetime. Let's make it fun.
Ashe, ashe, I love it. Thank you for being such a shining example of the spiritual knowledge and embodiment, but also someone who is clearly passionate about being alive. So it has been an honor and a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much. I hope that we have a membership platform for Dharma Glow that will be rolling out next year. And I hope you will come and speak to everybody and bless us up through wisdom.
Amazing. Yes. Thank you, brother. I would love to. I would love to take that opportunity in the future, and just feeling so much gratitude in this moment for this opportunity to drop in with you this afternoon. And also just wanting to recognize you and honor you for the work that you're doing in the community of spreading messages and bringing awareness of what Dharma Glow is, and really calling everyone forward to step into their Dharma and glow with it and create a platform where people can bring that forward and express, is so beautiful. So thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm so grateful to connect.
Thank you so much for that reflection. And as we sign off here, do you want to tell people where they can find information for your program?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so my Instagram is just Jade Michael, 3 L's on the end, because 1 L was taken and 2 L's was taken. So I get to be Jade Michael with 3 L's. And then jademichaelcoaching.com/neurosovereignty is where you can find more information on the program, or in my Instagram bio as well.
Wonderful. And we will also put that in the show notes so y'all can connect with Jade. Thank you, Jade. We will see you next time.
Yeah.
Thanks for spending a little bit of time with us, fam. I hope you got inspired and got value like I did. If you want to tap in with us more, connect with us on social media at Dharma Glow. Head on over to dharmaglow.com and see what opportunities there are for a deeper connection. And if you're feeling it, share it with a friend. Take a screenshot, post it on your IG stories, or just share this podcast and let them know you were feeling it. Appreciate your energy. Thanks for being here. We'll talk to you real soon. Peace.